Welcome to the Thrive Podcast with the Shiloh Missionary Baptist Church.
How does your faith kind of play into it, or does it play into it?
What can be done about it?
When I say the church, I'm talking about evangelical white Christians and the black folk who attend their churches.
Hello, welcome to the Thrive Podcast with the Shiloh Missionary Baptist Church. I'm Fred Jeff Smith, pastor of Shiloh, and I'm very happy that you are either viewing this on Facebook or YouTube or listening to us on iTunes, Spotify, or Amazon Prime. As always, we encourage your input and your feedback. You can reach me at fredjeffsmith@gmail.com, fredjeffsmith@gmail.com. Let us know how we're doing and what things we can do to make the Thrive Podcast better for you. I am totally honored today to have as my guest the Mayor President of East Baton Rouge Parish, Sharon Weston Broome. Mayor Broome, thank you for taking the time to come and share with us today.
Well, I'm delighted to be here. I always look for an opportunity to share the good work that we're doing and to talk about some relevant issues that impact our community.
Well, let's start with a positive thing. I got information either yesterday evening or first thing this morning about your Inspire scholarships for young people who are graduating from East Baton Rouge Parish schools. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Yes, we. You know, I believe that our high school students, many of them sometimes are limited when it comes to scholarship opportunity, especially need-based scholarships. So the Inspire Scholarship is now giving our students an opportunity to write an essay. Mm-hmm. And with that essay, we will have a group of individuals who will be ranking them, and we will be giving out $1,000 scholarships at local high schools. So, you can't beat that for
no,
a process.
You yes, ma'am.
All you have to do is write the essay, and I believe that we will be getting some great responses.
And the scholarships are not limited to state schools. You can carry that money anywhere that
Correct.
You go.
You can take that money anywhere you want to go.
Well, I think that's absolutely fantastic.
And, you know, with the cost of books these days, $1,000 can help with books.
Absolutely. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Can I ask you a couple of questions about things that kind of get under my skin? I don't like Jeff Landry. I don't mind. I don't like Jeff Landry. I don't have to like Jeff Landry. I don't need anything from Jeff Landry. How you doing, Governor? But I know that as the mayor of East Baton Rouge Parish, you have to have a working relationship with the governor's office. Can you share with us what the status of your relationship is since Governor Landry has taken over?
You're right. As the mayor president of the capital city, it certainly is advantageous for me to have a working relationship with all of our governors. Quite frankly, I had a great working relationship with John Bel Edwards. I have had an opportunity to meet Governor Landry mm-hmm. and talk about some of our priorities here in the city parish. And it seemed like he was in tune to some of the issues that were important to us, whether they were capital outlay issues especially and other priorities. Because, you know, let's face it, we are the hub of Louisiana
yes.
as the capital city. And so it would be mutually beneficial if we had the support of our state government, mm-hmm. which we have had in the past, mm-hmm. To help us uplift some of the priorities that we have that make our city overall a better place, mm-hmm. right? So we were welcomed, and our comments were well received.
Well, it seems that as Attorney General, and maybe I'm blurring the lines between his previous office and his current office, he took shots at East Baton Rouge Parish, at Orleans Parish, and at whatever parish Shreveport is in. He hit the three major cities that were black majorities talking about the preponderance of crime that existed within these communities and and wanting to have records made public. It's funny, they want to conceal records having to do with business, but they don't want to conceal records having to do with juveniles. Has any of that changed? Is there any news on that front? Is he still pursuing that that particular line?
Well, that line, I will tell you, as far as Baton Rouge is concerned, hasn't been pursued. I mean, I know that there has been a lot of intentionality, if you will, as it relates to New Orleans. I can't exactly tell you what's going on in Shreveport. But for example, and I don't want to digress from the governor, but you probably saw that bill that a legislator from Monroe had that dealt with the Spanish Town area and creating a way that the state would have control over of that area.
I did see that. Yes.
And so, you know, it was my belief and many of the citizens in that area, while we recognize there are some specific improvements that needed to be done, we certainly want to control our own destiny in that area, but we don't mind collaboration and communication. And so there will be collaboration with the police department and with the police the Capitol Police, right? And so I use that as an example to say that right now there hasn't been anything from the governor's office that has been laser focused on Baton Rouge.
Okay.
And I would certainly like to keep it that way.
I certainly can understand that. Did you have any previous working relationship with Mr. Landry and his other political offices?
I really did.
I understand he was a part of the legislature for a brief period.
Yeah, I wasn't there. You know, in fact, I don't know if I think he worked for a legislator, but I have not had a relationship with him. And listen, as a leader, the leader of the city, as I said, I'm the type of person know the benefits of trying to have a good working relationship with the state and with the city, working collaboratively. So I just want the best for Baton Rouge and our citizens here. So we'll see what the future holds.
Yes, ma'am. What's going on with your Metro Council and this city manager stuff? I ain't crazy about that either. I thought that we had put that whole issue to bed, and yet it continues to be resurrected, be brought back. And give me your assessment of the whole city manager piece.
Yeah, I'd be glad to. First, let me say that recently there were some changes made by the vote of the council for the overall plan of government. One of those areas of change was what is now being described as a parish administrator, which has evolved from a city manager concept. The definition of the parish administrator is basically, as I have read it, the same as the chief administrative officer, which we now have in city parish government. I believe that I have no problems with a parish administrator. It's basically the same as having a CAO. I believe the challenge is when the Metro Council has to affirm or confirm the mayor's selection. Because of the nature of politics, sometimes you could have a great candidate, and if there's some things going on that are adversarial with the council and the mayor's office, which I would say that never happens practically, since I've been mayor. But
bless you.
But at any rate, then you might be caught in a quagmire, right? But at the end of the day, this is what I share with people. it's not so much about the title. And it's more about having the financial resources to elevate a salary to get qualified individuals to take or assume the role of a parish administrator, city manager, et cetera. But what we also have to be cognizant of, and I think this is a reality and something that needs to be said, is that Baton Rouge, our consolidated form of government, mayor-president, we have a strong mayor form of government. Mm-hmm. I believe that we should maintain a strong mayor form of government.
Yes, ma'am.
For the future and beyond, mm-hmm. right? Because I believe it puts us certainly in a very unique and positive light, especially, you know, when you think of the people, when you think of the changes that have evolved here in Baton Rouge, mm-hmm. Especially in our demographics, right? Having a strong mayor is important. I believe the citizens of this city and parish, especially of the city, and I say that because, you know, the mayor is the mayor of the city and then the parish president. But I believe that individuals elect people who they want to represent their best interests. Mm-hmm. The parish administrator is not going to be elected, right? The parish administrator will be held with the responsibility of implementation, of managing. And that's okay. You know, the as I said, the mayor right now has a CAO, and that is his or her responsibility.
So let me ask you this mm-hmm. question. If the mayor has a CAO,
mm-hmm.
why is there this push for this different new position? And why is it that the Metro Council wants veto power, from my perspective? They want veto power on the person who sits in that seat. It seems to me that if the CAO is working for the mayor, then the mayor ought to have the first, last, and only say as to who sits in that seat.
Yeah, I believe it's, you know, I can't explain all of the motivation. I do know, I understand some of the motivation, and some of the motivation is for efficiency. You know, they believe that the mayor, although a strong mayor form of government, should mm-hmm. be focused on, and I don't have a problem with this concept, should be focused on perhaps recruitment of new businesses mm-hmm. and other initiatives that she can spend her time on versus the management of the city. But once again, without sounding redundant, we come back to, as I see it, it's not so much because the parish administrator is doing the same thing as the CAO. Mm-hmm. It's not so much about the title. It's about if you want someone who has the credentials of managing a big city, as some city managers or assistant city managers have, mm-hmm. then you have to elevate the salary to get people in that position. Mm-hmm. Now, there are some people that think that, you know, I don't want a city manager or a parish administrator to make more than me. I don't have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
If they're doing the work, I do not have the problem with it. Number one, most public servants are not motivated to run for public office because of the salary.
Certainly.
So, you know, I wasn't motivated because of the salary. I was motivated because of service.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have a problem with the parish administrator making more money than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth be told, there are many city parish employees who are rehires who make more than I do.
Yes, ma'am.
Because of their retirement and then now coming back making a salary. I just believe that whoever the parish administrator is, that person should be selected by the mayor because you want someone not only who has the credentials, but who has the chemistry. And I believe the mayor should have the final say. Now, as it is now, that's not what's going to happen. You know, it's going up for a vote, But those are my only concerns. You know, those are my only, that is, I should say, my, that one caveat is my only concern, is that the confirmation process could be complicated. I would hope that it would be, not be, but you never know.
It's apartheid in East Baton Rouge Parish, as far as I'm concerned. It's a white majority Metro Council that wants to make a sticking point out of them having the final say in the mayor's office. If they want the final say in the mayor's office, let them run for mayor. Other than that, it becomes the mayor's responsibility, whoever the mayor is,
correct,
to choose who works for the mayor and out of the mayor's office. And so I have a hashtag on Facebook every day, no apartheid in BR. and I'm trying to push it as hard and as fast as I can, because I see this as a racially motivated effort on the part of the white majority Metro Council members. How is redistricting going with regard to the Metro Council? I know that there are problems with the legislature and the Supreme Court, but you haven't heard anything about redistricting when it comes to East Baton Rouge Parish. East Baton Rouge Parish is majority black. Mm-hmm. It just seems to me that it ought to look like majority black on the Metro Council.
Well, I have to tell you that council members and our office, my office, have been in agreement with trying to pursue another African-American seat on the council. I believe there are some council members who are have worked on redistricting specifically. I wouldn't say it's been tabled or forgotten about, but I believe that there's still work to do, just like we're facing, you know, in some of the redistricting efforts as it relates to our congressional seat and, you know, judicial seats. Mm-hmm. And so it's not off the table. It's just, I believe, a matter of reemerging with the redistricting and seeing where we're going to be with it.
This talk of at-large council seats, has that been thoroughly put off to the side?
It is. It's not part of the new plan of government suggestions or recommendations, I should say. Actually, one of the recommendations in the changes I wholeheartedly support, and that is also have that the mayor should have her own executive council.
I agree with that.
So you always need wise counsel to lean on, who has no other diversions or loyalties, right, at the end of the day.
I have to tell you, and I've told you this in private, I wasn't the biggest fan of the outgrowth of the new arena at
you
LSU
and
the things that took place there. It seems like it's going to happen. Can you share with us any greater details with regard to that?
Well, I will tell you that I don't have any specifics today about the arena, but I will tell you that the arena, the River Center slash hotel conference center, and Memorial Stadium should all be considered at the same time. And when I mean that, I mean in the minds of our citizens, in that these are three transformative, I believe, projects for our city and parish. Now, what we have to see happen, and what I am committed to seeing happen as we move forward, is transparency. I believe that's one of the I know is one of the desires of the citizenry here. And so, for example, I just recently put out information about what I consider a plan for the River Center and a hotel conference center. And embedded in that plan, and I want to share, I meant to bring it to share it with you, but embedded in that plan is a committee process, but it is also, it also gives room for public comment in the process. In fact, I don't have to bring it to you. It's online right now.
Excellent.
Yeah. So the citizens can look at it. They can make their comments about it. Now, this is just with the River Center discussion hotel conference center.
Okay.
So the last piece, which is part of this three project initiative, is Memorial Stadium. Mm-hmm. And there are still evolving details around that. But I see all three as complementary to our tourism industry mm-hmm. and to the economic growth of Baton Rouge and East Baton Rouge Parish.
With regard to development downtown, do we know anything more about passenger rail service between Baton Rouge and New Orleans, or has that hit a wall at this point?
Well, I believe it's on. The train is at the stop at a stop at standstill. What the trains do?
Okay.
I think it's parked at the station. You know, for a minute, because and rightfully, I get it. You know, there's certainly a concern of making sure that folks in citizens in the northern end of our parish mm-hmm. are not forgotten about as we talk about a train and train depots, you know, that will emerge as a result of mm-hmm. this. I support the concept of having a train from Baton Rouge to New Orleans. But I understand some of the concerns that some of the council members have shared, and I believe that they are issues that can be worked out.
Mm-hmm.
I believe these issues can be worked out. Now, you know, what I want to talk about, too, I don't know if you remember, Pastor, but knowing you, you probably remember because you keep up with everything, but when I first came in office, there was this discussion about a tram.
Yes,
I knew you would remember
yes.
from downtown to LSU. And I said no to that and said we would have what we call now a bus rapid transit that starts in North Baton Rouge, goes down Plank Road and goes all the way out. So we repurposed, if you will, mm-hmm. that grant appeal. And now and we do have dollars for that. And so I'm excited that I met with our new director of our bus system here, CATS, Theo Richard. And I believe that we will start seeing movement in terms of the bus rapid transit by the end of this year or next year, you know, beginning of next year. That's going to be transformative. I brought that out because I was making an analogy between, you know, some of the thoughts
right.
about the train
right.
and some of the thoughts that existed about the tram.
It leads me to a philosophical question.
Mm-hmm.
East Baton Rouge Parish is multiple communities within one mm-hmm. parish system. Northern East Baton Rouge Parish, Zachary Central area is Scotlandville. That's mm-hmm. one entity. And then Dixie and Midtown, and that's another entity. And then downtown is another entity. And then South Baton Rouge, and then Southeast Baton Rouge. These are entirely different groups of people with entirely different thought processes. As mayor president of the entire parish, how do you synthesize the needs and the concerns that exist in these various groups throughout East Baton Rouge Parish?
Well, first, I believe that there are some shared goals and common denominators that all of these different groups share. For example, everybody wants a safe community.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you live in, you know, Delmont, Dixie, or whether you live in Shenandoah or something, everybody wants a safe community.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that there is a common denominator when it comes to everybody wants to, that most people, no matter where they live, they want to be able to work, make a decent living, and mm-hmm. pay their bills. Mm-hmm. I really do believe that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there are some disparities, if you will, that exist within our city. They're notable, you know, as I've often said, and I know people say, oh, there she goes with that classroom analogy again. You can't have part of your city at an A grade and part of your city at a D grade and think everything is okay.
Right.
So, which goes to your question of how do you deal with the different, the folks who are at the A grade, they have to understand that sometimes you have to put more emphasis and intentionality on getting the D grade up. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you're forgetting about them. You're still addressing their concerns, but you may have to spend a little bit more time over here with the D grade to get it up. You know, I think about our Movie BR program. 72 projects, I think, that were part of that initiative that our citizens approved on the ballot. And I had a young brother share with me the other day, and, you know, he was saying, he's like, Mayor, you've been doing stuff all over the place. He said, every time I go out there to Piku Lane, I'm wondering if the people out there realize what you did, you know. But it just didn't stop at Piku Lane. You know, like a couple of weeks ago, we were out at Thomas Road talking about a $13 million investment in Thomas Road, which is almost one end to the other end of the parish. So there are, and that goes back, there are some common denominators, shared goals. But as a leader, I have to, you know, be guided by data and wisdom and insight in terms of how I navigate all of that. But at the end of the day, I believe our community has to understand that we have to be unselfish in how we approach our community. We want a Baton Rouge that's as I am now saying over and over, that it's the best mid-sized city in America. That's our goal. And I believe that can be a shared goal and vision. Mm-hmm. But people have to understand what it takes to get there, right? And it may take, I'm with you over here, but I got to spend a little bit more time over here.
Yes, ma'am. I think one of the best things that you have done in the time that you have been mayor was your hiring of Murphy Paul. I was a huge fan of Chief Paul and the work that he did while he was here. I was very sorry to see him go. Back in January, when we had the Martin Luther King celebration, you introduced the new chief of police at that ceremony. And I have not had the opportunity to meet with him in detail. But just tell me, how do you think things are going with the transition to the new police chief?
I believe, first, let me back up. Murphy Paul, our former chief of police, was a true reformer. He was a true reformer, and he hit the ground running in our police department and made some significant impact there through reform measures. He also made a significant impact in the community in terms of his relationship with the community. I often say, and you may have heard me say this before, I often tell him, you know, the two of us are going to write a book one day of everything that we went through.
I can imagine.
Because we had a lot of late night conversations, daily conversations, mitigating issues, dealing with issues. But he did an awesome, outstanding job as our chief of police, and we still have great communication.
Good.
So now we have a new police chief, and let me say this. I don't know if everybody knows the process that took place, but we had a group of community members which is the same process I used actually to hire Chief Paul, and these community members were charged with looking at the candidates who passed our civil service exam, which you have to do for a police chief.
Mm-hmm.
Then they were asked to give me, I believe it was five individuals out of those individuals who passed the test and who they interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave me a list of five acceptable candidates.
Mm-hmm.
That was their task. And T.J. Morris was among those five acceptable candidates. I interviewed all of those five acceptable candidates and came to a decision of hiring now Chief Morris. Now, Chief Morris, I believe, is growing into his position
mm-hmm.
as chief. I believe he has a lot of things that stand out to me. The fact that, you know, he was one of maybe two police officers who had done procedural justice training and implicit bias training. He trained all of our officers over the past years in our training academy. And when I talked to, I did my own investigation mm-hmm. and I talked to some of the folks who had, were graduates, you know, now BRPD officers, recently new graduates, about their thoughts about him. And they said that it was a constant theme that they felt he would be fair inside the department and outside the
mm-hmm.
department.
Mm-hmm.
And so we unfortunately have had an uptick in crime, which is not the chief's fault, you know.
Correct.
But I believe it, the more and more we talk, I know he's been very connected to the community, reaching out. I believe he will be a fine police chief. I really do. And Chief Paul has said, you know, give him a chance, just mm-hmm. like you gave me a chance.
Right.
So, you know,
right.
He's just about 3 months. Well, it's April, 4 months in. So we have a good working relationship. He's at every, and we don't want to see this as a become habitual. Unfortunately, he's at every crime scene that, you know, homicide that takes place. He's out there.
Yes, ma'am.
And somebody told me recently, I didn't see it on television, but, you know, he was really impacted by a recent shooting where the two children were in the arms of the parent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really impacted, you know, impacted him at that time, seeing it, what was going on with that family. And so he has a compassionate heart, and he also has the skills to do the job.
Well, I look forward to the opportunity mm-hmm. to sit down and talk with him in greater detail.
He said he loves Shiloh Church. You heard me?
Yeah. And we enjoyed having it. And I hope to have good conversations with him going forward. While we're talking about justice mm-hmm. matters, and criminal mm-hmm. crime matters, law enforcement matters, I saw yesterday that the sheriff's office has come out with a new anti-gang task force. First of all, for those who may not know and may not appreciate the distinction, could you share with us the distinction between the role of the sheriff's office and the role of the Baton Rouge Police Department?
Absolutely. First of all, the sheriff is an elected official.
Yes.
He is elected by the community, the parish, and his responsibility. He is the chief law enforcement officer for the parish. And basically his department works everything outside of the city of Baton Rouge. The Baton Rouge Police Department, which has an appointed chief of police,
mm-hmm.
is responsible only for the things within the boundaries of the city of Baton Rouge. I will tell you that, as I shared, I was glad that the sheriff shared his initiative, which is actually a collaborative initiative that we, the Baton Rouge Police Department, had also been working on with him. And so the capturing of resources and officers who are specializing or being in tune to these areas where we know that evidence shows us that a lot of our challenges are with these groups that are retaliating against one another, contrary to any thought that is just usually random. Most of what we're seeing is not random.
Yes.
And so the Baton Rouge Police Department has a specialized unit also that's working on the groups. They're using the sheriff used the term gang yesterday, so groups, gangs. And the only way that we are going to have to, the only way that we're going to really address some of these issues around crime in our community is for all of our law enforcement to work collaboratively towards this. And so we shall see, I believe that we'll see some tangible results of this collaboration between BRPD and the Sheriff's Department.
Do you support the idea of an enhanced, improved, new parish jail, as opposed to the existing parish prison that's out in North Baton Rouge?
I do. We need a new parish jail, and we also need a new juvenile center.
Mm-hmm.
It is my hope and my work will be towards making sure, but it will probably, we don't know what path we'll take down, but my goal is to have, I believe a complex would be the best way to describe it for a new juvenile facility and a new parish jail. There have been designs that have been proposed where there is a downsizing of the jail and more of a focus, let's just say, a mental health wing, right? I believe that would be helpful too. And then overall, having a new juvenile facility. One of the models is having a complex. That's what I should say more specifically. One of the models includes having a complex where all are together. But at the end of the day, the work is still and the discussions are still taking place around that. But there's no getting around the fact that we need a new parish jail because we, and you've heard many of the advocates talk about this. Our goal is not to, you know, people who are in jail should be treated humane.
Mm-hmm.
No ifs, ands, buts about it. I don't think anybody disagrees with that.
Mm-hmm.
The conditions of our present facilities certainly are in need of improving. And I believe that's a general consensus that we hear from people on a regular basis. So I can't tell you when an initiative will be put forth publicly, but I can tell you that there are a lot of discussions that are taking place around that. And of course, I'm not saying anything that you haven't heard from the sheriff or others as well, but we definitely need two facilities. Right now, City Parish is working to secure our juvenile facility to work towards opening an additional wing. We've done that by getting individuals elevating salaries to have more people in this wing for the juvenile facility. So we're doing everything that we possibly can to make the facilities safe and humane.
Do you believe that new facilities will demand increased taxes?
I don't know. I believe that there are different models out there for that. Mm-hmm. You know, that it, I'm not ruling that out, but I'm not going to say that's the only path. There may be some public-private partnerships mm-hmm. that will emerge that can help us deal with the cost of a new facility.
Going back to, and I'm dating myself now, I remember you as a news reporter. When you first came to Baton Rouge, you were doing journalistic work. And you grew into the politician that you have become, and you've served on every level of city and state government. As someone who has a background in journalism, do you have any opinions about the way, not the mayor's office, the way that journalism treats East Baton Rouge Parish? Not specifically the mayor's office, but East Baton Rouge Parish.
Well, let me start by saying that I believe journalism has moved away in many respects from the original mission.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it is being driven now. And it's always been, you know, dollars and cents have always been a part of the equation. But now with the advent of the social media and the YouTube, you know, then our traditional media, as we have known it, our newspapers and our, you know, TV news, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
Have more competition. Right. And so when it comes, going back to your question,
yes,
about treating East Baton Rouge Parish fairly, I will say there's always room for improvement. There's always room for improvement. You didn't say the mayor's office.
No,
you said,
yeah. No, I didn't. I wanted to be fair. I didn't want to be specific to that. I've had a couple of journalists in here,
oh, really?
Sitting across.
Do they agree they need to be? Is
well,
room for improvement?
Some of them say nothing at all. Hi, Mr. Hunter. How are you? But others of them have taken the position that not that different from mm-hmm. yours.
Mm-hmm.
My contention is that as journalism has become more profit driven. That it has changed the focus of, mm. of what journalism is. There are no more, I shouldn't say no more, there is a paucity of journalists that are simply interested in sharing the truth, the facts of the story. But everyone has a slant.
Mm.
And I see it more in national media than I do in local media. And depending upon your particular slant, you watch certain things. I ain't watching Fox. I don't care for Fox. I'm not watching Newsmax, which I have been encouraged to watch. I'm an MSNBC guy because I think along MSNBC lines. But not only do I see it in national journalism, but I see it in local journalism as well. And I was just curious in that's your background, if you see that.
I will tell you that I am very selective about my intake of news.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very selective. And what I mean about that is I don't do a heavy diet of news. And then perhaps when I'm trying to find out, I pursue it on my own
mm-hmm.
Through various sources. When you have been in the news mm-hmm. a lot,
mm-hmm.
You certainly want to know. And I have folks who tell me, who look at me doing interviews and tell me their, you know, give me their evaluations.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes when you feel that that slant, you know, and when you're in the public eye so much, having a steady diet of news can be a distraction towards the work that you're doing as it relates to an elected official. So I just really spend more time focusing on the work.
I understand. I understand. Well, let's get back to a couple of more questions about the work. What's your I understand that there's going to be a new 24-hour homeless shelter near the Bishop Ott Center. Tell me how that evolved and what's your expectation of that?
Well, you know, homelessness, I always tell people, homelessness is an emerging issue here in Baton Rouge.
Mm-hmm.
And why do I use that phrase? Because if you go to other cities, you will see what real homelessness looks like in terms of the multitude of people that are impacted and that you see on the streets. So that's why we've been really working to be proactive. The shelter was motivated by conversations with my staff and I to talk about how do we remedy, and remedy is a big word, but how do we mitigate homelessness? It's a very complex issue. You have individuals who, as you well know, some have fallen on hard times. Some are impacted by mental health issues, substance abuse issues. Some are veterans that are challenged. You know? So it's not a one-size-fits-all, you know, scenario. And so one of the things we realized after talking with a number of people is that having a non-congregate shelter, which means a 24-hour shelter, would help reduce the need for people to be on the street during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have a place to go, because that's what happens in many of the shelters. They go overnight and then throughout the day, then they're roaming the streets.
Yes.
And so...
And hoping to be able to get back into
the shelter. Yes. Exactly. And so St. Vincent de Paul has been a leader in dealing with one of our partners in dealing with homelessness and also having a shelter. And so we have dedicated $1 million to construct this non-congregate shelter, the first of its kind in East Baton Rouge Parish, with a partnership of dollars from the Louisiana Housing Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
We recognize the makeup of that community over there. So I have recently engaged in conversations with some of the other area churches and faith leaders, pastors in that area, to see how we can even take a broader look at how we are addressing homelessness in that area specifically. And I believe that will be a good model for us moving forward. But it's a very complicated issue. One of the I don't know if people know this, but if you go to the downtown library, there's someone sitting right almost at the entrance who works with Volunteers of America.
Okay.
And they do case management with the homeless and help connect them to resources. So sometimes when the homeless are downtown, then they come in there and they talk to that individual. One of my ultimate goals, and we're going to have a prototype of this very soon, is to have a mobile unit that goes out to the individuals to do case management.
Okay.
I believe that model will be effective. So we will be launching a pilot on that real soon through our Human Services Division, where all of our social services goes to the people in the community.
Sounds like a very hopeful and promising project. I want to get around to what, well, I'm getting to the end, but I want to get around to one of the things that really I applaud you for, you and Mayor Pro Tem Cole, and that is you took on St. George. And I wanted to get an update on where we are with St. George.
Well, we are now waiting to hear back from the Supreme Court. The Councilman Cole and the Mayor Pro Tem and I, we have taken the case and our attorneys. I want to certainly give a shout out to Mary Olive Pearson and Brett Furr who took on this case. With other attorneys as well who've been involved in the process. Their legal skills helped win at every level,
mm-hmm.
Starting, you know, with 19th JDC, then the Court of Appeals. And so our the folks who are for St. George took it to the Supreme Court. And so the case was heard. Councilman Cole and I were there to listen and to hear. And so now we're waiting to see what happens from the Supreme Court level. And we haven't heard anything yet.
Well, I think that it was a brave thing for you to do. I was never in favor of St. George. The idea of developing a city just so you could have a separate school system, and that's all it's really about, is a separate school system, is to me the height of selfishness, and it is the antithesis of the kind of community that we all say we want. So I applaud the fact that you all stood up for East Baton Rouge Parish in the way that you did. I'm interested to see how this is going to play out, especially with the governor's new initiatives to just take public school money and give it to anybody he wants to give it to so that they can take further fracture mm-hmm. an already fractured public school system. Mm-hmm. Does the mayor's office have any kind of lobbyist that works at the governor's mansion?
Oh, we do.
When these crazy ideas of the tyrant governor come out. You know, the idea of being able to just take money from black, brown, and poor people and give it to folk who already have their children in private schools so that they can further make a profit for themselves as they send their children to school essentially for free. It's mean-spirited. And I'm just wondering, I know that there are different levels of government and the level of influence that you might have might be limited, mm-hmm. but I'm just curious, does the mayor's office have any kind of representation that goes to the Capitol and tries to make headway with some of these ridiculous things?
Well, I will tell you, in all honesty, we do have a lobbying team. Their sole responsibility, though, is to lobby and address legislation that would negatively impact the functions of city parish government. For example, I gave you the example of the situation in Spanish Town,
mm-hmm.
and then there's another bill that you might be familiar with, which will take away funding from the city parish, from the sheriff's office, et cetera, that we get through. It's dealing with the railroad, something that's been on the books for years, but it's been funding that our city has depended upon.
Mm-hmm.
So our lobbyists are working on that. Now, some of the more broader issues, I would think that, and I don't even know if the school system, I'm sure they do. Scratch that. I'm sure the school system also has the lobbyist as well to focus on education issues that would negatively impact.
I don't know if they do, Madam Mayor.
But let me tell you, if the school system doesn't, our local school system doesn't, you know, you have organizations like LAE,
right.
LFT.
Right.
So I would
think that they're in the trenches dealing with those issues. I would think that they are.
The governor,
I'm sure they are.
And Secretary of Education Brumley are doing serious harm to public schools in Louisiana. And it just seems like right now a conservative legislature is giving the governor most of what he wants, and it's extremely frustrating to people like me, because the long-term impact is you have no way of knowing what kind of damage they're doing to generations of people by doing this. And somebody's got to pay for this stuff. You're putting this together, and conservatively, they say it's going to cost $255 million. Well, you've already got a $558 million hole in the state budget. So where's the extra $255 million going to come from? They're also talking about trying to get rid of state income tax. So where's the tax money going to come from? And I have to ask you, because the governor ain't coming in here. So I'm asking you, where is this money going to come from, except in heightened sales taxes? And sales taxes are regressive taxes, as everybody knows. It's a tax on the poor and on black and brown people. And I wish that the school system had strong lobbying, but it's like a tag team thing. The governor is doing his thing, and Secretary of Education Brumley is doing his thing, and they're in alignment. And school systems are going to be forced to pay the price. And eventually that's going to trickle down to our streets. It's going to trickle down to Eddie Robinson Drive. It's going to trickle down to North Boulevard. It's going to trickle down to Government Street. And then we're going to have to deal with these issues. And so I wish that there were stronger lobbyists existing at the state capitol.
Now, I know I'm not the one that's supposed to be asking the questions, but I'm going to ask a couple.
Sure.
One is, have you had any Bessie board members on the show recently?
I have asked.
You've asked?
I have not gotten any yet.
School board members?
Yeah, well, I've had school board
members. Oh, you had school board members.
some who are trying to get away from the school board. I have had school board members on here. I've had three or four of them on here.
Well, you know, I will say this. As someone who's pretty laser focused on, this city and having a great community for everyone to thrive and prosper, public schools play a significant role in the fabric of any community, mm-hmm. right? And to that extent, we should be concerned about what's going to take place in our education system. One of my focuses these days, which I find a number of individuals agree on, is that we have to spend more time in early childhood education. When we talk about many of the societal issues that we face, whether it's poverty, et cetera, we've got to start our young people on a trajectory of success, and that has to start at the cradle.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a real big proponent, and we started our Cradle to K initiative to, in fact, we used to have many meetings over here at Shiloh.
Yes, ma'am.
Our Cradle to K initiative to really get into and lean into empowering our children and their parents. And so we're having some recent conversations with individuals around that, but that is really critical as we talk about the whole education landscape.
Everyone who knows you knows that you are a devout Christian. Tell our audience how your faith plays a role in the last 8 years that you have served as mayor president. And the prospective 4 years that you're going to be seeking?
Well, you know, my faith certainly is an integral part of everything that I do, my thoughts, my leadership, ever since I've been in public service. And some people often ask me, why do you run for office, or why did you run for office? And I say, in all due respect, and I don't think you would disagree with me, that I sensed a calling to public service. Mm-hmm. You know, that it was that calling, that still small voice that said, you can help do something about some of these things. And so that has been my, you know, my focus. My faith has certainly motivated me, kept me motivated. My faith has certainly kept me strong in leading as the first female of this city and parish and an African-American woman in leadership. My prayers have kept me grounded and kept me strong. And so, you know, I wouldn't be the person that I am. I went to church. I've been in church all of my life. And I always loved the things of the church. I always wanted to be there, you know, developed a lot of my leadership skills, I believe, in the church. Had a lot of people who were vested in me and pouring into my life growing up. And then one day, as a young woman, younger woman, I realized, I was like, man, why aren't things falling in place in my life? Like they, you know, I've got a college education, I've got a few skills, and I wasn't seeing the manifestation of things falling in place in my life. And then I heard some women here in Baton Rouge mm-hmm. talk about, you know, their careers. But as they were talking about their careers, they were also talking, giving God glory and, you know, the role that he played in their lives. And I was like, I'm missing that. Mm-hmm. I'm in church. I'm saved, but I have not surrendered, you know, everything in my life. Mm-hmm. I always talk about there's a difference, you know, the, you can be saved, but is Jesus really your Lord? You know, is he,
yes,
is he ruling the, you know, your life? And
yes,
so
ma'am.
When I did that, I can't say that everything just happened overnight, but I can tell you I had enormous peace about my life and was willing to work wherever. And I have, and I think that has been part of my my journey, an important part of my journey. You know, I have people to come up to me and say, oh, I remember when you used to work at Godshaw's. I used to work with you at Godshaw's, mm-hmm. you know, or people, I remember when you were administrative assistant over at that office. And so I believe all of that was part of molding and shaping me and preparing me for public service.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, I've told people, probably one of my, faults, and my husband always says this, I have never seen anyone who fires somebody and tries to find them a job, you know, because I've been in that space without a job.
Yes,
I understand that, you know, so that's
also
important to me. And so my faith is embedded in everything I do. You know, I get up early in the morning. I've been up since 4 o'clock this morning. You know, I spend time with devotion and prayer and then go out and tackle the issues of the day.
Yes, ma'am.
And that's who Sharon Weston Broome is. You know?
Well, coming up in November, there's going to be an election for mayor president. Look at that camera. That's your camera.
Oh.
And tell our viewers and our listeners why they should vote for Sharon Weston Broome.
For the past 8 years, you've given me the privilege to serve you as your mayor president. And during that tenure, we've been through a lot of different challenges. We've been through hurricanes. We've been through civil unrest at times, potential civil unrest. We've dealt with issues of, you know, development. We've dealt with issues of equity and inclusion. We've dealt with a pandemic. And through all of those experiences, I've been steadfast as your mayor and president, leading through that. But more importantly, I've led with a vision. That's why we have the largest infrastructure project in the history of Baton Rouge with Movie BR that's not just helping people in one side of the community, but every part of Baton Rouge. That's why we're focused on the big vision of ahead and looking at what we have laid as a foundation and building on that. I like to look at myself as Broom the Builder. We've been building. We laid a foundation and we're continuing to build. The future is bright for Baton Rouge. We have pathways to progress where we're going to continue to work on creating and sustaining equity and inclusion for our community, where we're going to focus on making sure the quality of place and quality of life is part of the fabric of this community. We're going to continue to work on increasing public safety. And under all of those pathways to progress, we've got some real specific initiatives that you will see evolve as we move on in time. But I think the most important thing that I can say is that, you know, Sharon Weston Broom cares for the citizens of this community, that everything that I do for Baton Rouge is to help uplift the citizens of our community. And my care and my concern is obvious. So I look forward to getting your support as we move forward for four more years. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor President, for taking the time to come and share with us today. We hope you'll come back again real soon. Thank you for viewing. Thank you for listening. We'll be back again next time.